Cairo, Seattle.
It's time to get schooled with a professor, John Clayton.
Welcome to Schooled with the Professor. And of course, technology continues to be so important in the National Football League because there's so many different things that you need to keep track of. And of course, the technology gets better and better and better. And here in Seattle, we're fortunate that Zebra Technology is here because they're the ones that do all the tracking, all the chip work. And of course, this is their first year in working with the National Football League. It's a building business and wanted to kind of give the 2018 update on where it is. And joining us right now is John Pollard, Vice President of Zebra Technologies, and kind of educate us on how this first season has gone with all the tracking, all the things that come out in next-gen stats, and all the things that are being provided to teams.
Yeah, thanks, John. Thanks for having me on. This 2018 season has brought a lot of interesting conversations from the various teams across the league that we work with. And just for your listeners, for context, we are the official player tracking technology that's installed in all the NFL stadiums, and we track both player movement and ball metrics for each and every game. We also have a subset of teams in the NFL that use an analogous set of technologies in their practice facilities to track workload and player usage throughout the season during practices as well. And, you know, through this season in 2018, I think what we've kind of hit a turning point. This is the fifth year that we've actually been tracking player movement in games as the official player tracking partner of the NFL. But this 2018 season in particular, I think I would say that the tracking data that's derived from the game tracking that the NFL provides through the next-gen stats site for teams, the teams are now looking at it as an ingredient that they leverage and utilize each and every week. Whereas the previous years, I think there are a group of teams that might have been a little bit more curious about what tracking data could lend in terms of insights for player evaluation, performance, and tendency studies. I think we're seeing now more of a universal usage across the league of teams using the information for their game planning and player assessment needs.
Curiously, and maybe I'm reaching a little bit, I know it's not a big percentage, but can a percentage of all the offensive improvements in this league being used and the changes and all that be attributed to some of this stuff? Because, you look at, the Sean McVays, the Doug Petersons, the Andy Reids, all these guys that, really, they come in with a lot of college-type concepts that they've incorporated into their NFL playbooks, and so much of it is to get, get to the first read with a completion, get the movement going with players and how the players react to it. Can the technology just in this first year be partially attributed to some of the success on offense?
Well, I don't have any specific examples that I can speak to, John, but I would like to think that's definitely, the information has definitely helped support teams that are looking to innovate on both the offensive and defensive side of the ball. I think, as we all know, we're seeing it in the evolution of offenses in the NFL. The game about the usage of space and creating open spaces, not just matchups in particular, which are always important and probably predominant, but how players actually explode and have certain speed and capabilities within inside of ranges of space. And I can speak to one example, for instance, working with a team, when instead of evaluating their receivers' speed, just flat-out speed for a particular play, let's say, for instance, if they're running a 9 route or an 8 route, for instance, how about that player's speed in a 0 to 5-yard range, and a 0 to 10-yard range, and a 10-plus-yard range? And I think that type of information, now we can assume that teams are using that and trying to determine what types of players are best suited for certain types of routes and how those players perform in certain spatial areas.
Yeah, and of course it's funny because you'll see things pop up on Next Gen that just amazing. For example, just the tight ability, because one thing I think it's able to do is evaluate the ability of a quarterback to make a tight throw, and I know that that is something that is a real specialty, and of course that's so important because now you have all these new good young quarterbacks coming in. Some are real good in throwing into tight spaces, some are not, but you're able to evaluate that and then start to see when they make improvements.
Yeah, it's really incredible, and I think from a couple of ways, I love the tight window throw category in the next gen stats data as well, John. And I think there's a couple of things. It definitely gives a more refined sense of information and research and knowledge for the professional evaluators and game planners. But I think for us as, you know, in the media and as partners of the league and teams and as fans as well, you start to appreciate the true athleticism that these, these quarterbacks have, as well as other players as well with other data sets and that the tracking data provides. You know, for instance, I was looking at the information this year and, you know, I live here on the east side in the Seattle area and travel all over the country, but we've got a great game this weekend here in Seattle, right, with the Seahawks hosting the Chiefs. And looking at the tight window throws this year, I was looking at Russell Wilson's capabilities. We, in next-gen stats, in our application, we judge tight window throws as when there's a defender 1.5 yards from the intended receiver at the time of the ball arrival. And, you know, Russell Wilson's completion percentage on tight window throws this year is 30.7%. Now, the people who are used to more traditional statistics might think that's a low percentage, but it's actually extremely high, again, when you consider the window that he's throwing in. You know, and I'm sorry, that's his throw percentage. He throws into tight windows 30.7% of the time. His completion percentage in tight windows is 44.3%, and we look at Patrick Mahomes, for instance. He doesn't throw as many tight window throws in terms of opportunity. He only throws about 23% of his passes in the tight windows. He has a completion percentage of 45% in those tight window situations. And, you know, again, for us as fans in the media and in this industry, you look at that and you think, well, Patrick Mahomes maybe isn't still throwing in the tight windows, even though he has great arm talent. That might be somewhat based on the type of play design that Andy Reid calls for the Kansas City offense.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, it's interesting because, I mean, this game features two guys that could have been baseball players and they're quarterbacks. And I know talking to Russell Wilson, one of the things that he talked about when I brought up baseball was that him being a second baseman, it allowed him to throw as a baseball from all different angles, and he can incorporate that into his football throwing, where in Patrick Mahomes, I mean, you can see his baseball ability with the fastball that he had and all that. I mean, you have one stat on next end at the beginning of December. Patrick Mahomes had 10 touchdown passes this year when the ball traveling 8 miles an hour at a throw. No other quarterback has thrown more than 6, and this is a guy that I think when he had a 95, 96 mile an hour fastball, he delivers that with accuracy in this league.
Yeah, it's incredible when you see the arm talent. You're right, with both of these players having baseball in their backgrounds. It's interesting to look at metrics like tight window throws, again, something we didn't have just a few years ago to evaluate their capabilities. And one of the things I noticed, and you may have noticed in your research as well with Russell Wilson, you know, 12 of his, he has 12 tight window throws for touchdowns this year, for instance. And, you know, that, again, that shows the capability, I think, you know, Russell's vision, if I may, but also his arm capability and technique that he can get the ball in the tight windows in the red zone as well.
And one stat you have here is called difficult throws, where you have Wilson at 46.7% completion percentage, 10.1 yards an attempt, 19.6 touchdown passes, and a 118.2 passing rating on difficult throws, all number one in the league.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've all, from an anecdotal perspective, we've learned to appreciate Russell's capability under duress and pressure. And, you know, being able to make, you know, what would you say? He creates plays with his feet and buys time for his receivers. And I think we're now, again, the tracking data allows people to appreciate what that really means, because we translate it into empirical data like you just described as well. And that, again, it's interesting for us in the media and as fans, but also, again, as I mentioned earlier, we're seeing teams leverage this information in the process of scouting and evaluating players and also helping develop players as well.
Kind of give us just the basis again. I mean, you put the chips in, in the shoulder pads, and where else in the stadium and all that do you put different devices so you can make these judgments?
Yeah, happy to talk about that. So, you know, Zebra Technologies has been around, you know, since the 1960s as a corporation, and we're known for across other industries like retail, hospitality, travel, logistics, and healthcare. Operational environments where we track certain assets. For instance, the Boeing warehouse here and locally leverages Zebra tracking technologies. And we took aspects of those capabilities and brought it to the football environment, you know, again, 5 years ago. What we do is we put two nickel-sized chips into the shoulder pads of players on the field, all the players on the field. For down linemen, sometimes we put a third chip between the shoulder blades on the shoulder pads themselves. and those chips blink or emit a signal 12 times a second to a series of receiver boxes that are installed around the perimeter of every stadium. And typically we use 20 to 24 receiver boxes depending upon the stadium configuration. And so the chips tell the boxes, hey, the players here on the field, this is how far they're traveling during a certain play or how fast they're traveling during a certain play. And then we apply software to that to derive things like, okay, how fast and how far for a series of plays, a certain specific plays, or over a series of games. And then we also have a chip in the ball itself. The chip inside the ball is an interesting thing. The ball weighs about 400 grams. The chip is less than 4 grams. So we have worked with Wilson Sporting Goods, you know, with the help and support of the NFL, to take our chip and help meld that into the bladder of the football. And the location of the chip is somewhere just underneath the NFL shield, as we all are familiar with in NFL football. And that chip emits, because of the information that comes from the ball, that chip actually blinks and transfers a signal 25 times a second, whereas the player tags emit a signal 12 times a second. And the information we can gather is velocity and RPM data on the passes. Now, something that might be interesting for everybody is that, you know, they are releasing player tracking data, and that's what's generating these next-gen statistics that we've been talking about. The ball data itself, the NFL is not releasing that to the teams or to the fans of the yet, and they're still evaluating the information that comes out of the balls, the ball tracking data. And hopefully sometime in the near future, there'll be a decision to release that both to teams and the fans.
Well, I know one thing that was released, and I go over to players with it a bunch of times. Shaquille Griffin, a couple weeks ago, I think it was maybe in the Minnesota game, right before the Minnesota game, he chased down somebody on a pass play, and I think he was going 22.1 miles per hour. Whatever it was up to that point, it was the fastest of anybody. And, you know, for a cornerback that isn't considered the fastest in the league, I mean, he was kind of stunned to realize, I was moving that fast?
I'm glad you brought that up, John. And it reminds me of something I definitely wanted to share with you and your listeners. Something that happened in 2018, you know, when miles per hour were first generated out of the information, you know, that was a new metric for us in football, right? We thought to think of 40 times and 10 and 20 yard splits, and so on and so forth. I think what I'm seeing now, my interactions with you know, executives in the personnel and scouting areas and coaches, that miles per hour is now a metric that they've become more acclimated to in determining a player's capability in the football world. So that's been an evolution and a change in 2018 that I've seen take place. And you remind me of a scenario I heard from a professional evaluator, and I think it speaks to the value of this new information that the teams can leverage as well. There was a scenario, I won't name the teams or the players, and that would be a little too disclosing, but the scenario I think everybody will get. You know, we're later in the season, and a team had a number one receiver, the team that I was talking to. Their number one receiver was on the field and had caught a pass in an open area and started, you know, running quickly to the end zone. It looked like a short touchdown. The team they were playing against was playing their fourth or fifth string defensive back. It was a cornerback. Anyway, this defensive back ended up catching the number one receiver from behind. And this particular play, you know, not only flashed on the field, but also showed up in the evaluation of the film afterwards. And the evaluators of the team that I was talking to, who were the team of the receiver, they were saying, "Who is this cornerback? Who is this guy? Never heard of this guy, you know?" And they looked at their scouting reports, and they realized that they'd graded this guy out as potential seventh round pick, maybe an undrafted free agent, potential person to bring in for training camp and evaluation. Based on his performance on the field, on that play, with the miles per hour behind it, they said, geez, we would probably have graded him more of a fifth or fourth round potential pick if he can sustain that type of performance on the field. And that really lit something up for me that, again, you know, scouts, the professional eye, the trained eye, these guys are the best in the world at evaluating athleticism and capabilities for American football. But information like this can help support or even enlighten them to a player's capability. So, I mean, right there we heard about a guy that probably wouldn't have been high on someone's board or a potential draft or a camp person to evaluate, whereas if this kid could play at a consistent level with that type of explosion, they might consider him as a mid-round draft pick. And I think that's very telling in how this information can be leveraged in the future by teams.
Oh, there's no question about that. In fact, I think this – because I remember going to the – to the analytics conference once and running into somebody who was working with the Minnesota Vikings. And they did, some analytics with speed and all that on Stephon Diggs. You know, and Stephon Diggs was a fifth-round pick. But the two analytics people that were working with the Vikings at that time, you were working kind of part-time and experimenting and all that, they took some metrics of some speed things that the scouting staff didn't have, and then it's like they put that in there, and they stole him in the fifth round, and now he's one of the better receivers in the league. And so sometimes, I mean, those metrics that you pick up that may, you look at the eye, you look at the tape and all that stuff, but when you see the hard numbers on these things, wait a second, I'm looking at this guy. This guy is faster than what we're watching. And then he turns out to be that way.
That's correct. And this particular player, this defensive back, as I remember now, he was a 4.5 40 in Indianapolis. And as you know, I mean, look, a 4.5 40 as a cornerback, I mean, it's not sure to us normal people, but, for an NFL cornerback, a mid-level, high-level pick, I mean, that's going to be a disseminating piece of information where he may not get a high pick as a result of his 40 performance. But on field, that gain speed, that term we've heard forever, as we watch football, this guy's got game speed. Well, we can now put numbers to game speed, and I think that helps support the scouting capabilities of these guys.
Well, and I can see the changes that are coming up with the league and how the defenses are now having to react to what offenses are doing because, again, it's so much now, trying to make sure you get the ball to, particularly with the new young quarterbacks, to the first read. But now the counter on that, because I would imagine, because I went to the Baltimore-Kansas City game, and I watched more cover zero blitzes where there's no safety in the middle of the field. And I know some colleges take the position, it's almost making guys non-positional in the sense you can't guess if they're going to be a pass rusher, a guy's going to go into coverage. And if that's going to be the case, spacing and the speed and the metrics of all that and getting those guys out there have to match up for cutting down some of the edges where receivers are, getting separation from the cornerbacks.
Yeah, it's a great example. It's one of the more exciting pieces of work that I've been doing with some of our team clients, John. And that is identifying on the defensive side of the ball scenarios like you're talking about. And I think about a linebacker like Leighton Van Der Esch with Dallas, right? Or certainly a great player like Bobby Wagner and the downhill tackling metrics. I mean, now with the help of software and, supported by the data that our system collects and tracks, we can identify, a moment in time where the linebacker is, how far he is from the running back at the time of the snap, at the specific time of the handoff, at the mesh point, as we would say, right, and how fast and how much distance that linebacker or defender of any position is tracking the play and then coming down and being able to make a tackle on the player. And, of course, certainly same type of thing. If you've got a play-action opportunity and you're able to freeze that moment where that linebacker does have coverage responsibility, he recognizes it's not handoff, it's pass. Now, with the help of software, again, you can help analyze how fast that player can change direction and how much distance they can close. Again, you can get really into the minutiae of the specific details and data, but when you think about it, take a step back, that information can certainly help from the play design and the player development perspective. It also can help those strength and conditioning coaches, figure out different types of explosive moves and lifting techniques and stretching and pliability techniques that they offer the players as well. So, again, we're just on the beginning of teams, again, using this information in a way that's far more democratized, if I may, across the organization and considered not just in strength and conditioning and performance, but on that coaching, player evaluation, and play design side.
Okay, let's go quick here because I want to try to get into a couple things just real quickly. A couple of ones that you do, and of course, a lot of these are available to the public. You can see it. Time to throw. What happens on time to throw for a quarterback?
Yeah, on time to throw, we take from the moment of the snap to when the ball's released or a defender's within 2 yards of the quarterback itself. And I just looked at Russell Wilson's comparisons from 2017 to 2018, just for the fans. And Russell Wilson's time to throw in 2017, average time to throw was 3.05 seconds. It's a little less this year at 2.99 seconds. Now his air yards in 2017, his intended air yards, how far he was delivering the ball down the field, was actually almost 10 yards on each attempt in 2017. In 2018, his intended air yards is tracked right now at 9 yards, so one full yard less than 2017, and that might equate, obviously, to the less time of show. Maybe they're just shortening routes by a certain perspective. And so we're seeing that in the numbers play out.
Okay, average separation.
Yeah, the average separation, we monitor that by the receivers. on the teams, and we'll see separation. For instance, we've got separation for the receivers on the Seattle Seahawks. Like Tyler Lockett, his average separation is 3 yards, and that's how much distance he has from the nearest defender at the arrival of a pass when he's targeted. Just for comparison, Doug Baldwin right now is tracking in 2018 at 2.9 yards average separation. And this was interesting for me. You don't typically see this. Nick Vanette, tight end, usually you would suspect that a tight end might have a little less separation than the speed, you know, number one receivers who are going downfield. But Nick Vanette's averaging 3.2 yards of separation every time he's targeted.
And then a final one, completion probability.
Yeah, completion probability is a mathematical equation that takes a number of things into account. The time, the distance of the nearest defender to the targeted receiver, the location of the receiver on the field as it pertains to the boundary of the field itself, how far the pass is downfield. So there's a number of things that are weighted and calculated, and then that's created into what the probability is of potential for every single catch. That's something that's getting a lot more attention now, certainly getting a lot more exposure from a media perspective. We're seeing a lot of that on broadcasts and talk to a lot about it on certain broadcasts and different publications, but also the professional evaluators are leveraging that as well.
Hey, John Pollard, it is fantastic talking to you. And again, it's Zebra Technologies. You'll see some of the results, not the team results, because again, the teams are paying for this. They're going to be getting that. But in Next Gen Stats, you can pick them up. John, thanks for educating us on Schooled with the Professor.
Thanks for having me on, John. Take care and happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you. And that does it for this week's podcast. In between episodes, you can follow me on Twitter at ClaytonESPN. If you enjoy these weekly one-on-one conversations, consider leaving a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening to the show. Thanks for listening. See you next time on Schooled with the Professor.